We like to think of inheritance as a clean handover, as though our parents passed down a sealed envelope of instructions, and we, in turn, carry them forward untouched. The language of genes has fed that picture, a code, a blueprint, a script written once and for all. But the deeper science tells another story, one both more unsettling and more liberating. Our inheritance is not only a sequence of letters strung along a double helix, it is also the way those letters are read, silenced, amplified, and sometimes rewritten in the margins. And that reading is not neutral. It is shaped by hunger and by abundance, by the terror of war and the calm of safety, by neglect and by love. The name for this field is epigenetics, and it describes the marks that life leaves on the book of our DNA. Epigenetic markers are the annotations of experience. They do not alter the spelling of our genes, but they change the voice in which those genes speak. They are chemical impressions, methyl groups attaching to strands of DNA, proteins opening and closing like shutters, signals that tell some genes to whisper and others to roar. And because not all of these impressions are erased in reproduction, we inherit more than the shape of a nose or the color of an eye. We inherit echoes of fear, predispositions for resilience, metabolic habits rehearsed in times of scarcity, stress responses tuned to the pitch of ancient dangers. In a very real sense, the lives of those who came before us remain inscribed in our cells. We are not blank slates. We are palimpsests carrying the shadows and illuminations of generations past. To speak of epigenetics is therefore to speak of responsibility. For if trauma and hunger can be passed down, so too can healing and care. If a single generation of famine can reverberate forward, so too can a single generation of nurture. We are inheritors, yes, but also editors. What we choose to do with our awareness will not only shape our own bodies and minds, it will ripple into the lives of those who follow us. This is not abstract. It is chemistry. It is survival. It is legacy written not only in stories and monuments, but in the very molecules of life. What epigenetics and epigenetic markers are. To understand epigenetics, it helps to return to the metaphor of a book. The DNA sequence is the text itself. 23 chapters, written in four letters, repeated billions of times across the body's cells. But no book is read in its entirety at once, and no book is read the same way by every reader. Some passages are highlighted, others skimmed, others skipped entirely. Epigenetics is the system of bookmarks, highlights, dog-eared corners, and penciled notes that guide how the text is interpreted. It does not change the words, but it changes which words come alive. These annotations are physical and chemical. A small carbon-based group can attach to DNA and dim the voice of a gene until it becomes almost inaudible. Proteins around which DNA is wound can be loosened or tightened, exposing some regions like an open page and hiding others like locked chapters. Small strands of RNA, never destined to build proteins themselves, drift through the nucleus like editors, amplifying some messages and silencing others. Together, these mechanisms form a choreography of expression. The body's tissues, heart, brain, skin, lung, are made distinct not because they carry different genes, but because they carry different instructions about which genes to use and which to set aside. Crucially, these epigenetic markers are not written once and left untouched. They are dynamic, constantly responding to the world. The stress of poverty, the warmth of affection, the burden of toxins, the rhythm of sleep, the nourishment of food. All of these are inputs that leave their trace on the genome's margins. Each marker is both a memory and a preparation, an inscription that says to the body, "This is the world you live in. Adapt to it." In this sense, epigenetics is less about heredity as a frozen archive and more about heredity as a living conversation, updated in real time by experience and environment. To grasp this is to feel a subtle shift in how we imagine ourselves. We are not fixed by the sequences we inherit, nor are we free from them. We are readers of a script that our ancestors began, annotators of its pages, and contributors to the notes that future generations will discover. Genes provide possibility. Epigenetics provides context. And in that interplay between possibility and context, the story of a life is written. The genetic memory we carry. For decades, we were taught to believe that DNA was the ultimate script of life, and that to inherit a gene was to inherit an unalterable destiny. This view made our biology feel fixed, predetermined, almost mechanical. Yet research over the last half century has revealed a more intricate reality. That experience itself leaves traces on the genome, and that those traces can be carried forward. What you feel, what you endure, what you survive, it does not vanish when the moment passes. It is remembered in chemical whispers and molecular scars, encoded not in the letters of DNA, but in the way those letters are read. And when children are conceived, some of these annotations travel with them into the future. The evidence is sobering. A famine endured by one generation echoes in the obesity and heart disease of the next. The stress of persecution or war shapes the cortisol rhythms of children and grandchildren who never saw a canned or heard a siren. Neglect in early childhood hardens stress circuits, producing adults who live in a state of constant vigilance. These are not metaphors. They are physiological facts. The experiences of one life become the biological predispositions of another. We do not merely inherit eye color and height. We inherit echoes of grief, survival strategies, metabolic rehearsals for scarcity, and hypervigilance for threats that may no longer be there. Yet the inheritance is not only wound, it is also resilience. A lineage that survived hunger has passed down bodies remarkably adept at storing energy. A lineage that endured violence has trained nervous systems to remain alert, to act quickly, to endure. These, too, are forms of strength, though in different environments they may feel like burdens. Epigenetic memory does not judge, it prepares. It equips descendants for the world as it was, not always for the world as it is. And therein lies both the gift and the challenge. We are armed with strategies for survival, but those strategies may no longer fit the terrain we walk today. To say that you carry your ancestors' trauma is therefore not a poetic exaggeration. It is a literal truth inscribed in your biology. The cold winters they endured may live on in your appetite. Their sleepless nights may hum beneath your nervous system. Their grief may weigh down your immune responses, manifesting as inflammation or fatigue. But alongside those burdens, you also carry their persistence, their ingenuity, their capacity for joy in the midst of struggle. If their suffering left marks, so too did their survival. What we inherit is never only shadow, it is also the light that kept them moving forward, the very reason you exist at all. How the marks are made. Epigenetic marks are not abstract ideas. They are tangible chemical events, small changes etched into the architecture of our cells. Imagine the genome as an immense library, with thousands of books stacked floor to ceiling. Every cell carries this library in full, yet no cell can possibly read every book at once. A skin cell must consult a different set of volumes than a neuron or a muscle cell. The question, then, is not only what the library contains, but which shelves are opened, which are locked, which passages are highlighted, and which are crossed out. Epigenetic markers are the custodians of this library. They decide what is accessible and when. One way this happens is through DNA methylation, the attachment of small chemical tags called methyl groups onto the DNA strand itself. These tags act like heavy ink blots in a manuscript, obscuring a word until it is no longer legible. A methylated gene often falls silent, not because its letters have been erased, but because they have been hidden from the machinery that reads them. Another way is through the modification of histones, the proteins around which DNA is tightly wound. If methylation is the blotting out of words, histone modification is the opening or closing of whole chapters. Loosen the coil and the gene becomes readable, tighten it and the gene vanishes from view. Finally, there are non-coding RNAs, molecular editors that drift across the nucleus like silent proofreaders, amplifying some instructions and striking through others, shaping the tempo and emphasis of the genetic performance. These processes are not random. They are exquisitely responsive to context. A prolonged famine, and the genome is annotated to favor thrift, storing calories with ruthless efficiency. A childhood of neglect, and the stress response genes are underlined and emboldened, keeping the body perpetually ready for threat. A life filled with affection and safety, and the annotations shift again, easing vigilance, amplifying pathways of repair and growth. In this way, the epigenome functions like a scribe, continuously rewriting the margins of the text in response to the world outside the body. Every moment of fear or tenderness, every cycle of hunger or satiety, every night of rest or sleeplessness leaves its mark, telling the genome how to perform its script. Most of the time, these annotations are temporary, pencil marks rather than permanent ink, meant to give the organism flexibility as the world shifts. But when the world delivers its lessons with enough force or repetition, the notes harden into permanence. A whole pregnancy lived in scarcity, a childhood spent in violence, a decade of relentless stress. These are conditions that carve deep grooves into the epigenome, grooves that the ordinary reset of reproduction does not fully erase. Even in the formation of sperm and egg, where most markings are washed away to offer the next generation a fresh page, some inscriptions remain. They slip through the erasure, carrying the memory of suffering or safety into the life of a child not yet born. This is why epigenetics is often described as a kind of biological memory. It is the body's way of saying, the world was like this, prepare accordingly. Sometimes the preparation fits. Sometimes it is tragically out of step. Either way, the marks are real. They are not metaphor, but chemistry, etched into the very scaffolding of life. Inheritance across generations. When we speak of inheritance, we usually imagine a clean handover, a passing of the baton from parent to child, gene sequence intact, untainted by the turbulence of lived experience. But the truth is less tidy. The lived conditions of one generation can reverberate into the next, and sometimes the next after that, before finally subsiding. This phenomenon is known as transgenerational epigenetic inheritance. It is not the rewriting of the genetic code itself, but the passing down of annotations, like marginal notes scrawled in the family Bible, faded perhaps, but still legible to those who come later. The most haunting examples come from history. Children conceived during the Dutch hunger winter of 1944-45 were born smaller, more prone to diabetes and heart disease, their metabolism imprinted with the memory of famine. Even more striking, their children, the grandchildren of those who endured the famine, showed altered health risks as well, despite being born in times of relative plenty. Similar findings emerge from studies of Holocaust survivors, where the biochemical signatures of extreme stress and trauma are detectable in their descendants. The body does not forget quickly. Its memories are tenacious, carried forward like whispers in the blood. Scientists studying these echoes find a pattern. Most epigenetic marks fade after two or three generations if the original hardship is not repeated. The first generation bears the direct impact. The second inherits the altered environment of development and some persistent marks. The third often carries traces, though fainter, like ripples spreading outward from a stone dropped into still water. By the fourth generation, in many cases, the water is calm again. But if deprivation or trauma continues, if poverty, stress, or violence remain constant, the ripples are never allowed to settle. They layer upon one another, wave upon wave, until they reshape the very shoreline of a lineage. This perspective changes how we understand history. The wounds of the past are not only stories preserved in books or photographs, they are molecular inscriptions carried in flesh. A grandchild's anxiety may echo a grandfather's battlefield. A granddaughter's heart disease may whisper of a grandmother's famine. And yet this same inheritance carries strength as well. Adaptations for survival, nervous systems trained for vigilance, metabolisms rehearsed to endure scarcity. Biology does not moralize, it prepares. But the preparation may not always serve the world we live in now. To inherit trauma is also to inherit resilience. And the challenge of our age is to discern how to honor one without being bound by the other. When we recognize this intergenerational ripple, responsibility deepens. We are not only living for ourselves, nor only raising our children for their own sake. Each choice of nurture or neglect, each climate of safety or fear, is a stone cast into waters that will lap at distant shores. We are both heirs and ancestors, caught in the same continuum, carrying forward memories written in chemical ink and deciding through our awareness which ones will remain and which will fade into silence. The responsibility of awareness. To know that trauma, hunger, and fear can echo through our cells is not simply an intellectual curiosity. It is a call to awareness. For if our biology remembers what came before, then our choices today are not isolated moments. They are inscriptions in a story that extends both backward into the lives of our ancestors and forward into the lives of those not yet born. We are inheritors, yes, but we are also stewards. and stewardship demands attention. This begins with self-understanding. Many of us live with patterns we cannot explain. Anxiety that surges without clear cause, appetites that feel disproportionate, exhaustion that seems older than we are. To ask, where does this come from, is not weakness, it is wisdom. These tendencies may be the echo of battles fought long before our birth, the residue of scarcity or violence encoded into our physiology. To recognize this is to reclaim agency. The inheritance does not vanish when named, but it becomes less of a blind fate and more of a story we can respond to. Awareness is the first act of rewriting. From there, responsibility turns outward into practice. Each act of care, sleep, nourishment, movement, tenderness, is not only a kindness to ourselves, but a recalibration of the annotations our children may inherit. To calm the stress response through ritual, meditation, or community is to soften the underlying passages of vigilance in our genome. To feed the body real food is to teach metabolism that abundance is possible. To cultivate safety in relationships is to send a biochemical message that the world is not always a threat. These are not small gestures. They are molecular interventions, notes written in the margins that may travel beyond us into the lives of others. And yet, awareness must not be mistaken for individual burden alone. The social world writes in our biology just as powerfully as private choice. Poverty, systemic racism, displacement, environmental toxins, war, these are not abstract forces. They are epigenetic authors, inscribing stress, hunger, and vulnerability into millions of bodies. If we speak only of personal choice, we risk ignoring the deeper script that society itself is writing. Responsibility, then, is twofold: personal, in how we tend to our own lives, and collective, in how we structure the conditions in which others must live. Public policy that ensures food security, parental leave, healthcare, and safe housing is not only politics, it is biology. It is intergenerational medicine. To awaken to this truth is to stand at a threshold. We can either allow unconscious inheritance to dictate the lives of those who come after us, or we can choose to confront it and begin to revise the script. Awareness is not easy, for it requires us to look directly at wounds that may not even be ours. But it is also liberating, for once we see, we can choose. And once we choose, the future begins to shift. Carrying forward, to carry the trauma of your ancestors, is not a metaphor. It is a reality written into your biology. The sleepless nights of a great-grandmother may echo in your nervous system. The famine endured by a grandfather may whisper in your metabolism. The silence of grief, the weight of vigilance, the instinct to prepare for storms even under blue skies, these are not always of your making. They are the inheritance of centuries, delivered not only through stories and rituals, but through the chemical marginalia of your cells. But inheritance is not destiny. If trauma and hunger can be carried forward, so too can care, resilience, and renewal. The same body that remembers fear can be taught safety. The same genome that once underlined vigilance can be persuaded to highlight rest, creativity, and joy. This is the quiet power of awareness, to look at the shadows within us and recognize that they are both wound and preparation. What once kept our ancestors alive does not always serve us now. To discern the difference is the work of our generation. Every choice you make, every meal shared in calm, every night of genuine rest, every word of kindness offered, becomes part of that ongoing annotation. These are not trivial acts. They are instructions written for the bodies of those who will follow. If fear and scarcity can echo across two or three generations, then so too can the gentle insistence that life can be lived differently. You are not only healing yourself, you are preparing a ground where your children, or their children, might no longer feel the shadows as heavily as you do. Carrying forward is not about erasure. We cannot delete the suffering of those who came before, nor would we want to, for it is also the proof of their endurance, the reason we are here. To carry forward is to take what was given, both wound and strength, and to choose which notes will linger in the song of tomorrow. It is to honor survival by making space for flourishing. It is to accept the weight of inheritance, not as a chain, but as a threshold. And it is to step across that threshold with courage, knowing that the story is not finished and the next chapter waits for your hand.